Oh, what's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Thomas Drance, covering the team at The Athletic as well.
What's up? Like, up 4-1?
Yeah. And then what was not up? The Canucks.
What's up? Nothing for long. Welcome to Canucks Talk. I'll let you get back to your intro.
That's all right. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and I've got a feeling it's going to be a busy one in the Dunbar Lumber text line today, so get those thoughts in now.
Do we have stuff to talk about?
Oh boy, do we. 650, 650
again. Do people have strong emotional opinions and reactions?
Remember when you were like, oh, no one's going to care if they lose the first game?
Well, but then
no one's going to worry about it.
Then I qualified it as, unless like the goaltending really struggles and the lack of mobility on the second and third pair are big storylines. And then they were... And then the Canucks, you know, they found a way to lose in the most painful possible fashion, right? And so all of a sudden, it becomes a big time fans react emotionally to a game in which very little harm was done, right? The Canucks picked up a point.
Mm-hmm.
They lost to a team that will not be in the playoff mix. And in moments, you could see it. Like in moments, that forward group looked absolutely nasty. Like scintillating, sick. And then in other moments,
it did not.
The goal prevention looked nasty in a bad way.
We got a lot to get into today, as Drance is alluding to. A very eventful game, to say the least, last night. The Canucks are practicing today. I think they're just getting on the ice right now at UBC. Brendan Batchelor is there at practice. He'll join us at 12:30. We'll have a chance to check in with Vancouver Giants general manager Barclay Parnetta at 1:30 as well. So, busy, busy show coming up. Let's go right into the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas, hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, October 10th. The Canucks open their season losing a wild one, 6-5 in overtime against the Flames is the final score at Rogers Arena. That's the headline, of course. Canucks look dominant in that first period, get out to a 4-1 lead on the shot clock as well, dominating, as you were saying, two things that we were wondering how it would look in the early season, right? The focus on generating off the rush, the more dynamic attack, all of those things started to show out. And yeah, it's only against the Calgary Flames, but I think people feeling pretty good watching that game. I imagine the players themselves probably feeling pretty good watching that first period or playing in that first period as well. Completely different story after that. The Canucks look totally flat for the remainder of the game, eventually fall behind 5-4 in the third period. Then JT Miller ties it up with the empty net on a very nice slap shot before Connor Zary undresses Filip Hronek, scores an OT to give the Flames a 6-5 win. So as you say, look, the Canucks come back and ultimately get the point. But there was some very, very good stuff on display in the first period. And then for the final 40 minutes, there were some very, very concerning elements on display for the Canucks as well. Look, there's so much to get into. We'll run through some of the talking points here. The quote from Rick Tocchet that stood out to me post-game was, that was a year and a half ago hockey. Just from, like, the script, right? Like, the wild swings and the excitement and the tying the game late and then losing in overtime.
Well, and the Canucks even looking dynamic attacking off the rush.
Yeah. I thought you're absolutely right. The defensive breakdowns, if you're not talking the Boudreaux bump, but the second Boudreaux season, the poor goaltending.
If you're not talking about the Boudreaux bump, but you're talking about the strays Boudreaux randomly caught last night.
Anyway. No, but even like the second Boudreaux season, right? The poor goaltending. That was a huge part of of that team's season, right? So Rick Tocchet was absolutely right. This was a throwback to 2 years ago or 18 months ago for the Canucks.
They were not that bad defensively. They were bad defensively, don't get me wrong. But it wasn't the complete bleep show we saw far too regularly during the... Honestly, I don't even know why you're excluding the Boudreaux bump season. The Boudreaux bump season was full of it too. They just never paid for it.
On the goaltending specifically.
Right, the goaltending, yeah.
The goaltending, because the goaltending...
But that was the only difference.
Boudreaux bump was excellent.
Yeah, also, do we need to go with something more dramatic than undressed for that game winner? Was it like disrobed? Like, I don't know. I feel like we need to find like an elevated
disrobed,
adjective.
I don't like the connotations of disrobed. That's a bedroom activity, not a hockey activity. Someone's disrobing.
As opposed to undressing?
I don't know.
Where do you undress?
No, but like, I'm just saying, it has different connotations.
Does it?
Yes, absolutely.
It's not a one-for-one synonym that mean exactly the same thing?
I'll explain it to you off the air.
Okay. Maybe when I grow up.
Yeah.
So look, I mean, we can I know we're going to get a bunch of texts into the inbox about Elias Pettersson, right? I know we're going to get a lot of texts into the inbox about Artur Seelovs. I know we're going to get a lot of texts into the inbox about Vinny Desharnais and Derek Forbert. And fair enough. Look, there were spotty performances up and down the lineup. In fact, there were spotty performances throughout the lineup, like to a man, universal, every single player on the Canucks roster after the first period, right? I mean, even the, like, JT Miller, obviously a massive beast throughout the game.
Well,
throughout the game. But really, it was the first period. After the first period, do you know how many shots on goal the Canucks had with Miller on the ice 5-on-5?
How many?
Zero.
Yeah. And I'll say,
So even like the most unimpeachable individual performance that we saw, because JT Miller looked like, you know, that sort of one C who can fight and change an entire game with a hit, but also set up multiple power play goals and have the game on a string 5-on-4 and score a scorcher with 90 seconds left on a rush down the wing. I mean, nothing you could say about JT Miller's performance that's not, you know, filled with superlatives.
I disagree with that.
And still the Canucks generated nothing in the latter 40
minutes.
There's
nothing you could say about JT Miller's performance that
isn't filled
with superlatives.
Well, there's nothing fans are going to say is my point.
I don't know about that because, again, part of the this was 18 month ago hockey or a year and a half ago hockey was you didn't just get the good JT Miller, right? You got the full spectrum of the JT Miller experience. And part of that is all the things you're listing.
But we
listing.
Didn't get defensive lapses last night.
The giveaways.
Sure. I mean, here
they're
and there.
They're bad.
They were bad.
They were really bad.
They were bad. But
and there were
like,
some other passes that
not like he
didn't
was,
turn into goals the other way that were also not great.
But it's not like he was on the ice for like even a single high-quality scoring chance. Or it's just that the Canucks stopped generating even with him on the ice. The Pettersson thing that struck me most during the game was when he bobbled that puck at sort of like the high left wing near the blue line and lost it with about 3:50 to go, right? He tried to deke.
Mm-hmm.
He bobbled the puck. It slipped out of the Canucks end of the rink. And he was Bronx cheered by the Vancouver fans. That blew my mind. I think it represented less. It said less about his actual performance last night, which was, you know, hey, look, he didn't go out and win the game for them, but he wasn't by any means
bad. It was
nondescript. It was nondescript. He was fine. Does he need to be better than fine? Yes. Are you going to get 20 fine games from every top player in the NHL? Yes, 100%. But I don't think this guy's got a lot of patience from Canucks fans.
Nope.
Honestly, it was even an off night. Like, the officials, I thought, had an off night. Tyler Myers lost his steal in his own end of the rink and was trying to get off, and the official came over to try and push him toward the Canucks bench, which, by the way, had like very much Tim Robinson voice, like, I didn't know you were allowed to do that. You're not. You shouldn't be helping a player to the bench as an official. But in the effort, he fell. The referee fell. I was just like, what is going on? The Canucks crowd, the Rogers Arena crowd, usually a very savvy group, right? Canucks fans know when to cheer. They bring unique energy. They manufacture special moments with this team when it's winning. They show their displeasure openly. The JT Miller chance while Kevin Rooney was prone on the ice. That even Canucks fans were off their game last night. Like, it was just such a weird night through and through. And for all of that, you know, I don't have a significant level of concern coming out of it, to be totally honest with you, Jamie, because it felt like growing pains to me. Like, it felt like a performance from a team that, you know, had really only played one preseason game with their A lineup. Yeah, they were probably playing some summer hockey. They did some really good stuff. Their forward group, again, I thought they looked nasty skating through the neutral zone with pace, especially in that first period. Mm-hmm. But even throughout, like even early in the second where there were some chances at chances that they didn't convert, this team looked awesome. Like from a forward group perspective, from the perspective of what this group can accomplish leveling up as an attacking team, like there's a lot that we saw last night that I'm very interested to continue to watch develop over the next 81 games. You know, the things that I was worried about, like the things that you could say take from last night that are like, that confirms my priors, so it's definitely a problem. You know, the goaltending was shaky, yep, to say the least. That was a really unfortunate game for Artur Seelovs in what should have been a really celebratory night, and honestly still is. To start a team's home opener as a 23-year-old goaltender is a tremendous accomplishment, but you know he's going to need to be a lot better than that. I promise you he knows it. I also promise you he's relatively unmoved by it, given what we know about his overall mentality. I'd expect we see Lankinen Friday now, but you know, Seelovs is going to get in again soon, and he's going to need to do an awful lot better. And then, you know, there were some concerns with the second and third pair that I think we had coming into this season, and you know, those were probably met. You can probably summarize the game as simply as, with Quinn Hughes on the ice, the Canucks outscored the Flames 2-0, 5-on-5. In all other minutes, the Canucks were outscored 3-0, 5-on-5. It's like that you could do worse than just stopping there with the story, mm-hmm, of the game. Yeah, it's going to be something that the club has to work on, and yet it just felt to me like somewhat inevitable growing pains for a team that's trying to evolve and trying to figure out how to play a brand of hockey that raises their ceiling versus the, you know, incredibly disciplined style that, you know, if they'd executed, probably would have made them more likely to win their home opener, but would make them an awful lot less likely to win their last game of the season, which at the end of the day is what we should be focusing on with sort of a laser-like level of discipline.
Well, and the question of how much of what went wrong last night can be kind of attributed to that process of evolution, right? The growing pains, the team trying to change its mentality, trying to build on what they established last year, bring new dimensions, and especially obviously with not just relying on the stifling defensive game, but having that dynamic offensive attack as well. I think it's an interesting question because it's not as if the goals against came as a direct result of the team cheating for rush offense or anything, right? Like, oh, they got way too, oh, you know, they were undisciplined in the offensive zone, and then they gave up a 2-on-1 or a 3-on-2 the other way. This was mostly in zone defending that was the issue, problems breaking out of their own zone, the goaltending, of course, as well. So on that, in the one hand, there's not necessarily a direct line between, okay, we're going to try to be more dangerous off the rush and the goals they were giving up last night. But one of the things Rick Tocchet said after the game was, well, look, in last training camp, we spent so much of our time zeroed in on defending in zone, on maintaining our defensive structure, on all of those things. This year, of course, that was not the case. Yeah, they still did some of that work, but obviously they were much more focused on the offensive side of things. So I do think that even though it wasn't as if you could point to each goal and say, okay, that one was a result of them, you know, cheating up the ice for offense, just the overall change of emphasis and where they were spending their mental energy in preseason, in training camp, what they were working on, I do wonder how much of a ripple effect that had. And then the other thing I'll throw out is they're integrating new players, right? So yeah, the core of this team learned how to play Rick Tocchet hockey at a really high level and learned how to play that defensive structure at a really high level last year, but they're also bringing in new players. Some of those new players have major question marks in the defensive end. I think you saw that with Daniel Sprong last night as well, right? So I am buying the, at least partially, the, okay, this is growing pains as they try to turn into a new team, as they try to find that next gear. I think the biggest things you could probably point to are that, and then just overall lack of effort, lack of juice, right? Like, I think you could have had a growing pains game, but if you had a much higher level of effort, you still come out with a win against a Calgary Flames team that's not as good as the Canucks, right? So I think it was those two things. Then we get into, you know, the third, the bottom two defensive pairings, the goaltending and all of it. But yeah, I'm buying, at least to some extent, the growing pains argument for what went wrong last night.
Yeah, I think that's almost exactly what we saw. Let's move on, and because we'll be recapping the game basically all day, including the batch in the next segment.
We got lots of texts and stuff coming in, so we'll continue to take your texts too.
But let's move on to lineup, because the Canucks are practicing out at UBC, and our guy Brendan Batchelor has some new look lines from the Canucks. Now, this is always an interesting thing to monitor after a loss, like especially a painful loss, right? What message does the coach send their group, right? Did they play well enough that there's no message sent at all and the team just woods with the same lineup that they utilized the game before? That's the old message from the coach, like, let's keep doing what we're doing. Let's keep doing what we're doing. Or do things change, right? Do things change and do we learn from that, sort of more than the coach said in their post-game briefing about exactly what they felt about the performance that they witnessed. Here's what the Canucks have done with their lines. Top six exactly the same. Heinen, Miller, Besser, DeBrusk, Pettersson, Sprong. Third line, Pew Suter, looking like he may be an option again. However, on the wing, Atu Ratu won 5 of 6 faceoffs last night. And as a result, we're looking at a Suter, Ratu, Garland third line. Hoglander bumps down to the fourth line to join Bluger and Sherwood. Amons and the recently recalled Archdeep Baines are extras among Vancouver's forward group. On defense, Hughes Hronek, shocker. Susie Myers, shocker. Forbert and Noah Juulsen with Vincent Desharnais. A key free agent acquisition for this club, but also a player that the organization explicitly talks about as a project, bumping out of the lineup. It was a tough third period, for sure, for that pair. And Tocchet saw enough to make a change, at least at practice today, and we'll see if that sticks when the club hosts Philadelphia on Friday.
Interesting there, right? Because the two players getting demoted, quote-unquote, in this setup are Vincent Desharnais, which I don't think a lot of people would be surprised with, right? If you're going to make a change coming out of last night, that third pairing, whether it's a shuffle, whether it's taking one of them out, that's kind of a logical place to start, given what we saw last night. And the other one is Nils Höglander. That surprises me a little bit to see him bumped down to the fourth line. I actually liked the combination of Garland Höglander, especially in the first period last night.
So I don't know if I'd say though that it's a demotion for Höglander, given that Vancouver's ice time was pretty evenly distributed. You know what I mean? Mm. You sort of look at the game last night, and for example, like, Nils Höglander played just as much as Teddy Bluger, his new line mate, right? Kiefer Sherwood played more than Nils Höglander, and technically Kiefer Sherwood was on the fourth line. Right?
Although he did get the bump up.
Well, that's what I'm saying. We're going to see situational changes. If he got the bump up, Connor Garland also got like a shift with the JT Miller line late, but for the most part stayed in place. He played 25 more seconds. It's not like the third line and the fourth line is a cliff, right? It's more like a gentle step down, if that. Nils Amon, however, would be the guy who I'd spotlight as getting demoted.
Oh, that's true. He gets out of the lineup.
And I thought he looked excellent on the penalty kill, first of all, but also, he played a fair number of minutes. Like, he ended the night with more minutes than Danton Heinen and Daniel Sprong. So that one to me is small S surprise, as surprised as I can ever be when it's Nils Amon who's being treated
who's
like
being
a depth forward,
getting out of, brought out of the lineup. And then just to mention there, as you touched on too, Archdeep Baines was called up by the team earlier today, so they have got the two extra forwards. And as you said, the practice day between games, we've seen from Rick Tocchet that doesn't always translate into what we'll see at morning skate or what we'll see in the game tomorrow against Philadelphia. So it's too early to say, Vincent Desharnais is going to be a scratch, right? Maybe trending in that direction, but we'll have to wait and see ultimately what happens on game day tomorrow. Interesting, Daniel Sprong, of course, who got benched for a stretch in the third period, right? And we saw Kiefer Sherwood go up to that line. I think some defensive miscues from Daniel Sprong in his own zone last night as well, but you also saw the positives with him opening the scoring on the power play. He still gets his now customary spot, or at least for now customary spot, next to Elias Pettersson and Jake DeBrusk. So no changes to the top six, but a little bit of a shuffle in the bottom six for the Canucks.
If you're a young person listening to our show, or if you play hockey, even if you just play in beer league and want to work on your shot, you will be hard pressed to find a better textbook example of like the distinction, the crucial distinction between a quick release versus a hard shot. The way that Sprong's feet hips, shoulders are all square to the net there, right? And the fact that his hands are still good enough in that posture to extend and create the downforce and snap that shot home. Like, man, a wildly difficult thing to do, expertly done. Sprong is a very special player. I'm not saying he's not a perfect player. If his game was a little more well-rounded, he'd be a superstar. But there are superstar attributes to his game, and we saw that in his Canucks debut.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Although we also saw the warts that have kept him from being a superstar as well. So we'll talk to Batch more about some of those lineup changes coming up at 12:30 that he was seeing out there at UBC. Is this the lineup that we see tomorrow night against Philly, or do you think there could be more changes or kind of a reversion back to what we saw? What's your gut tell you about what to expect going into tomorrow night?
I mean, just because the Canucks are so pressed up against it in some ways, cap-wise, you know, like I wouldn't have expected Friedman to get waived when he did, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a little bit nervous to sort of suggest, but yeah, I mean, look, the season's now started. I'd be pretty surprised if we're looking at, Rick Tocchet sort of messing around at this point. If he's practicing this way, he'll usually play that way in the game. That's what he did last season. I'd expect that to be consistent this year.
All right, I'm not going to do playoff forecast update from Dom's Mod. I don't even know if they're running them this early in the season. But look, the Golden Knights won. The Oilers got rocked by the Winnipeg Jets. And
and this is the thing, by the way. If, like, ask yourself the following questions, okay? Are you worried that the Boston Bruins suck because of what happened in Florida?
Not because of what happened in Florida, but maybe for other reasons.
See, I'm just convinced that the Florida Panthers are a wagon. I'm 0% concerned about the Florida Panthers. Are you worried that the Toronto Maple Leafs are going to struggle to score because of what happened to them in Montreal? Are you worried that the Colorado Avalanche suck because they got boot stomped by Vegas?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the Edmonton Oilers are significantly worse than the Winnipeg Jets because of what happened in one outcome in the other games? Well, if you're not reacting that way, right, don't let your emotions convince you of something like, well, the Canucks can't defend anymore and, you know, they're not good. It's like, people said they were a contender and look at them. If you're not reacting that way to the one games the other teams played, you shouldn't be reacting like that to the Canucks.
By the way, Lolo, the tile guy, reminded me of the acronym I coined last year after the first game, which was IJOG. Hashtag IJOG. It's just one game.
It's just one game.
Maybe we can bring it back.
IJOG, baby.
Hashtag IJOG, guys. It is just one game. We will continue to break down.
Can we do gambling odds quick?
Oh, yeah, sure. Go ahead.
I just want to remind everybody. So there were three bets that I spotlighted last night, right?
Yep.
The over 6.5, that hit comfortably.
That was easy. That was an easy one.
That hit comfortably.
I mean, just like some of the scores around the NHL.
Oh, I know. The overall logic of bet the overs early.
Four teams in this, if there was five games, four individual teams went over six goals themselves.
Okay, what about the one where they one didn't? What was the total?
1-0.
Ouch.
Yeah.
So I hope you didn't do a five-leg overs parlay. But yeah. Hunt overs in the early part of the NHL season as a general rule. Jake DeBrusk, I picked for three shots. He did not get three shots. He ended up with just two, and that was my iciest pick because he only had three shot attempts. So, unfortunately, I lost at DeBrusk, but got you the
other
plus 100. Daniel Sprong, anytime goal scorer, baby, plus 350. So if you tailed my picks. I'm just going to do this now as like a way to professionally bet on hockey without actually laying down a single wager. But if you tailed my three picks from the whiteboard yesterday, you'd be up 3.5 units.
You got to start like assigning units and stuff.
Well, I'm just assuming it's one unit each.
Okay.
So 3.5 units. You'd be up 3.5 units.
There you go.
My
the running score. We're opening the account now.
We're opening
Let's
the
see.
Account.
Let's
yeah.
see how we do after 82 games. We will continue to break down game one, hashtag IJOG, in exhaustive detail next with Brendan Batchelor. He's at practice. Of course, he calls the games here on 650 as well. Keep texting in. Again, the text box, as predicted, very, very lively today. So we'll try to carve out some time throughout the show to really dive in and answer some of your questions coming out of last night's game. But up next, it is Brendan Batchelor here on Sportsnet 650.